Have you seen those Capital One commercials? The ones where spokesperson looks right in the camera and he's like, this is the biggest no-brainer in the history of no-brainers. And then they'll throw it to something like that scene where they have a playground, it's elementary playground, and they're out in the line of kids is Charles Barkley, 6'4", you know, NBA legend, and he's there with a little 4-foot sixth graders, and they're like, see, it's even a bigger no-brainer than that. Well, I got a no-brainer, Capital One question for you that I think is worth writing down. If you had a choice, would you rather live for the dot or the line? And here's what I mean by that. Let's say the dot represents your mortal life. So I've got the object lesson here today. Imagine this represents every one of these perforated paper towels. That's 10 years. All right. So average lifespan, I looked it up. The CDC says in Minnesota, the average lifespan is 79.1 years. So if each of these is 10, you've got right here, this is about 80. So this is your life. Which seems like it's a lot, 80 years, until you then start putting that in perspective. So imagine this roll was big enough where we could stretch it out and it could take you all the way to Maple Grove. Then the 80 years doesn't look so big. Let's say you stretch it out to Minot, right? All the way to Minot. Now all of a sudden, the 80 years look smaller and smaller. You start heading to San Francisco with the paper towels. It's smaller. You go to the sun. And all of a sudden, that 80 years, it's just a dot. Compared to eternity, any amount of time, it's just a dot. So, biggest no-brainer in the history of no-brainers, would you live for the dot or the line? For eternity or for this mortal life? I recently was at a leadership event, and they had an airline executive there, and she said this. She said, takeoffs are optional, but landings aren't. And I was working on this message in my head at the time, and I was like, that's so true of almost every choice you have in life and death. It's one of life's certainties. And so let's have an honest conversation about that. I think it's something that often we don't talk enough about. If you're just joining us for the last 4 weeks, what we've been doing is we're working our way through the book of John. And what we've looked at is trying to understand, what does Jesus say about himself? Because so many people say so many things about Jesus. What did he actually say about himself? So we've been looking at these different statements where he says, I am this, I am this. And today, what we're going to look at is the fifth one. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. And so as we're getting started with this conversation, I'd invite you to write this down. What if resurrection is more than a metaphor? What if he was talking literally when he said that? That I'm the resurrection and the life. So let's not just take a closer look at what he says, but let's take a look at what he does right around the context of this statement. So if you have your Bible with you, let's open up to John chapter 11. We're going to start with verses 1 through 3. If you don't have a Bible at home, you could go right now, go to Bible.com. You can download the YouVersion Bible app. It is up to 650 million downloads, that Bible app. It's absolutely incredible. All right, here we go. John chapter 11, verses 1 through 3. Now a certain man was ill. Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with the ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him, meaning Jesus, saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. Now, something I discovered for the first time, at least for me, when I was studying this passage, is what that name Bethany means. The name Bethany, that city, it means house of the poor. And those people who've done research on things like this, they say there appears to be evidence that Bethany got that name because it was a place where the poor, where the sick from that area would go, and they'd be welcomed in and they'd be cared for. So that got my mind thinking, what if that is intentionally put in here to cue us in on some things? What if Mary, what if Martha, what if Lazarus, they were part of that ministry? You know, and this gets very real to some of us, because what if it was like this? What if Jesus got introduced to them as he's walking by, he's doing his first pilgrimage for the first time to Jerusalem, and let's say he's got his first time with his disciples, he's got his disciples with him, he sees this house where they're caring for all these people, and he's like, if I want to disciple my disciples, let's go see what's happening there. And I can picture this. I can picture Jesus walking into this place, meeting Mary, Martha, Lazarus. So what are you guys all about? And they're all about caring for these people. You tell me Jesus wouldn't strike up a friendship with people like that. And again, putting it in real life context, it's like in Juarez. You're walking by, there's the house, right? The Lopez house where they're caring for all these people. We developed friendships with the Lopez family over the years. I wonder if it's like that. Sure seems to make sense. All right, so I told you last week that right now, John chapter 11 that we're in, if you had to ask me right at this moment, what is your favorite chapter of the whole Bible? It's this one. Because as I was studying this, I thought I knew this chapter, but digging into it, there's stuff like this. The name of a city has so much meaning to it. And we haven't even got to the Easter eggs yet. And does everyone know what we're talking about with the Easter eggs? You know, that's those things they put in the stories, they put in the movies where it has hidden meaning for insiders. There are three Easter eggs, at least three Easter eggs, within the first three verses here, or the next three verses, I should say. And when I say Easter egg, this time it's literal because it's foreshadowing Easter that is to come. So in the next three verses, there's three of them. Look at this. John chapter 11, let's go 4-7. Verses 4-7. But when Jesus heard it, that Lazarus is sick, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God that the Son of Man may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then, after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." All right, if you can just leave that up for just a second here, Mike, on the screen. There's at least three Easter eggs here. Why is 2 days an Easter egg? Because 2 days becomes four. Why do I say that? Because it'd take him at least a day to get where Jesus was. Jesus intentionally waits 2 days. That's two more days. And then it takes him at least a day to travel. So it's 4 days. Remember that number? Because that's going to come into play in just a little bit. So there's one Easter egg. Why is "let us go" an Easter egg? Because those are the same words that Jesus is going to say to his disciples in the upper room when he says, "Let us go" from the upper room to the garden where then he's arrested, which is central to the Easter story. Why is Judea an Easter egg? The readers are about to be reminded of that right now in verse 8. The very next verse says, the disciples said to him, when he said Judea, the disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and you want to go there again?" In case the reader had forgotten what we just read, and if you were here the last 2 weeks, we were working our way through chapter 10. And in that chapter, and at least five other times in the five chapters leading up to that, it talks about how they're going to kill Jesus. They're plotting to kill him. They pick up stones to kill him. These powerful people, if he goes back to Jerusalem, there are powerful people who are waiting there to kill him. And if Jesus goes back to Bethany, where he was planning to go to help out Lazarus, that's 2 miles from Jerusalem. That's super target down the road is farther away than that. You're going that close to the people who just in the last chapter were going to kill you. Who does that? Who does that? Who does what Jesus is about to do? Puts himself in harm's way. Who does that? A good shepherd does that. What was chapter 10 about? Good shepherd. This is why I love this chapter so much. It's like everything comes together here. His sheep needed their shepherd, and he's going to lay down his life for his sheep. All right, and that's not all. This chapter doesn't just reinforce the good shepherd metaphor, what he says about that. It also, with what he had said earlier about the light of the world, that's in here too. Verses 9 through 10. Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, and he does not stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him." In this dark world, he can see. He can see that his time is coming, but it's not going to be right at that moment. Jesus can see what God has called him to do. I found this great quote that speaks to this. "How wise we are if we know that each of us has his own day of opportunity, a time for God's work." This whole piece of light, God can help you recognize these moments these moments, these opportunities that God's put before us to seize that are appointed. And then all of these metaphors that we've been talking about that Jesus has been putting out there, they're all connected. They're all connected. All right, verses 11 through 15. Let's look at these. All right, after saying these things, Jesus said to them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I will go waken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he's going to recover." Now, Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus has died. And for your sake, I'm glad that I was not there so that you may believe, but let us go to him." Oh, man. So one of the things about Jesus with this light is that he can see things that others can't. And so sometimes he can see things that we see as tragic, but he recognizes that thing that looks and maybe even is tragic, it's not going to end ultimately in tragedy. That's the kind of thing that Jesus is able to see. All right, verse 11:16 is another one of these verses. I look at this, I'm like, oh, of course this is in chapter 11. So when Jesus is like, I'm going to go, I'm going to get killed, all that kind of thing, Thomas, called the twin, says to his fellow disciples, "Let us go also that we may" what? "We may die with him." Has anyone ever heard Thomas called Doubting Thomas before? That's his reputation. Why do I love this chapter so much? Because it's got things like this. Can you be a person who is a person of great courage and faith? Because what's he saying here? I'll go die with him if that's what it takes. Is it possible to have that kind of faith in one moment and in another moment have doubts? Right? I can relate to that. I mean, I love this chapter. Love this chapter. All right. After the statement by Thomas, the disciples basically disappear from the story, which is also interesting. That'd be something to pursue. They basically disappear from the story. And the spotlight now shifts to an event that we don't find anywhere else in the Bible. This is the only place you're going to find this event that's going to be described here over the next several verses. So here we go, verses 17 through 19. "Now when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb how many days?" There's that number. I'll tell you why it's significant in just a second. He had already been there 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. All right, so it took Jesus 4 days to arrive. How many days had Jesus been, or Lazarus been in the tomb? 4 days. The reason that's significant, there was a Jewish belief in that time, in that place, that you weren't dead until 4 days later. There was a belief that for 3 days, the body would hover over, or the soul would hover over the body, and then when the body would start to decompose at day four, then the spirit would leave. So that little detail, that little four days, is to show everybody knows he's dead. He's just not like kind of dead. There's no voodoo and stuff going on. He is dead. All right, so let's keep going. Verses 20. I tell you why I love this. I love this passage, this chapter. All right, 20. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." It is not an exaggeration. I could spend the next 2 hours talking right about that. That if you, if only. Like, this is again why I love this chapter, because that is so much of the human experience. If only, if only. Think of how, aren't often the deepest, most painful memories, aren't they if onlys? If only I would have thought this through. If only I had listened. If only I had spoken up. If only we would have caught this sooner. If only they hadn't gotten in the car. If only I could go back now, knowing what I didn't know then. If only, if only, if only. There's often an if only attached to the most painful memories that we have. And then think about this. You could go this whole direction too. How many of our questions, our concerns, our wrestling with God is really a if only kind of thing? Okay, God, if only you would have met me in that moment, then I could trust you. If only you would do this, then I could believe in you. If only you would show up in this way, they would believe in you. Like, if onlys, if onlys, if onlys. This isn't the only if-onlys we're going to see. But how real and how raw is the scripture to just embed those little things? This is the human experience. If only, if only, if only. Check this out too. Let's put, Can a person can a person have doubts and have authentic faith? They absolutely can. And we see this because the if only, it's coming from Martha. Martha is about to make one of the clearest statements of knowing who Jesus is you're going to find anywhere up until this point in the scripture. So look at this exchange, verses 22 through 24. But even now, she says, I know that whatever you ask from God, God's going to give you. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. She says, I know that he's going to rise again in the resurrection on the last day. He says to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? And look at this. She says, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who's coming into the world. I don't think you're going to be able to show me anything from any other mouth before this point that is this clear an understanding of who Christ is. And if that's not enough, you know, if that's not enough, Jesus says, you know, I'm the resurrection life. She answers directly, you know, he asks her directly, do you believe this? She says these amazing words. And why have I fallen in love with this chapter? Look how this is constructed. Remember what she says. Let's put it up. If we could put that up with also what later John says here in chapter 20, he goes, here's the whole reason I wrote this. Look at how what Martha says is basically, she's already foreshadowing what John's whole point is. She's getting put up as this model of faith, even though she's got the if onlys. It's just amazing. All right. Now check this out too. Our faith, this is so good. Our faith isn't simply in a set of beliefs or rituals. It's not even exclusively in a future hope. Jesus said, me, I am the resurrection. Our faith is ultimately in a person who dares us to believe that the future isn't just out there, that it's also here with us in the present. I think this quote sums it up really well, these big thoughts. Resurrection isn't just a doctrine. It isn't just a future fact. It's a person. And he is here. He is standing in front of Martha, teasing her to make the huge jump of trust and hope. Why do I love this chapter? I love this chapter because it doesn't stop now. Think of how many people would probably just appreciate it. Stopped. She said the right thing. End of story. Let's move on. It doesn't stop with her saying the right thing. What John does now is he gives us a look behind the curtain into the heart of God. We get to see the heart. He doesn't stop with what's said. We get a chance to see the heart. Let's keep going. Verses 28 through 32. When she had said this, and she then called for her sister Mary, saying in private, the teacher is here, he's calling for you. And when she heard it, she rose quickly, she went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews, who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary rise and quickly go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him. She fell at his feet, saying to him, here it is again, right? If only. If only you had been here, my brother would not have died. There's another, if only you'd not been here. And what's interesting about here, Mary and Martha are two very different people. But it's this universal thing that we've got, if only, if only. All right, verse 33. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come to her were also weeping, he was deeply moved, it says, in his spirit and greatly troubled. So here's another reason I love it. This where it says right here, deeply troubled. When I was digging into this, so many of the scholars said, you're going to find some translations that use deeply troubled. That's not a good translation. It's really, he's angry. He is angry. So here's one of the commentators. Let me give you an example. So they said, most English translations, they just dodge the problem of anger by concealing the reference to it. Jesus was not angry, they imply just deeply moved in spirit and troubled, or deeply disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. But most commentators acknowledge that Jesus is indeed said to have been angry, both here and in verse 38. So I look at this, I'm like, why would you dodge that? In fact, I'll go this far. It would be really hard for me to understand or put my trust in a God that doesn't get angry. Can anyone else relate to that? You know, I remember we did that series on human trafficking a while back. Didn't you just want to go kick down the doors when we're hearing what's happening? Then we find out that doesn't help, which makes you even angrier. Parents, man, I don't know how many of you, there's been times you want to take those devices or grandparents and you just don't, haven't you ever just like, I just want to throw that thing on the ground and just break every device in our, I'm seeing a lot of nods here. It feels angry, doesn't it? Like, I just, oh, if that would make the difference, I would do it. I was thinking back last Lent to our Good Friday service. I'd just come back from Juarez, and I just seen a detention center where people were in there. They burned to death alive because they were behind these locked doors. And seeing the smoke on the buildings as we're driving past. On that same trip, we found out that some of the kids who we know and love, they had been going to this elementary school because their school burned down. The cartel is there. They're targeting these elementary kids. They're giving them drugs so they get them hooked. So the girls will become prostitutes and the guys will work for them. Makes you angry. I remember at Good Friday, I had to apologize because I'm mad. So mad. So why is Jesus mad right now? A lot of different understandings around that. My take on it, for what it's worth, is he's mad because a really good person is dead. Death is an enemy. A really good person is dead. He's separated from his loved ones, and this death who's coming for us all is an enemy. And a deep anger wells up within the one who came that we might have what? Life. Might have life and have it abundantly. All right, let's continue. Verse 34. Jesus says, "Where have you laid them?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." There's another Easter egg. Go to chapter 20. There's another Mary. She comes to the tomb. She uses the same words. It's about the tomb, the empty tomb. So they lead Jesus not to an empty tomb, but to Lazarus' tomb, which still has Lazarus in it. And we come to a really short verse. Shortest in English, not shortest in Greek, but it's a really short verse. Verse 35. Jesus wept. Jesus wept. John 11:35. This is fascinating to me too. The Greek word that's translated here is wept. This is the only place you find that verse or that use of the word wept. That particular Greek word, only here in the New Testament. It's not a word that describes the kind of weeping that was happening with all the people around Mary. It's not the kind that you want the world to see. It's not the word that describes the kind of deep grief and sorrow where you just are overwhelmed with this sense of kind of almost like a hopelessness. What it is a word that I think captures exactly what was happening there. It captures the heart of someone who sees pain. He knows what's to come, but he sees the pain. And it hurts. I can picture it's his eyes just getting wet with these tears. He feels what they're feeling right now. And I couldn't agree more with this quote that I came across while digging into this text. What a lesson Jesus' tears are for our churches. Can I get an amen? And that is true on so many levels. All right, verses 36 through 37. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind have kept this man from dying?" Isn't that another form of the if only? Another group with the if onlys. All right, verses 38 through 41. Then Jesus, deeply moved again, angry, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and the stone lay against it. And Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Hey, Lord, by this time, there's going to be an odor. He's dead. It's been 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away, they literally in the Greek, they lifted the stone as Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. This is wordplay in the Greek. It's literally, they lifted up the stone as Jesus lifted up his eyes. Let's continue. Verses 42 through 43. I knew you always heard me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me. Then he, when he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. Another Easter egg. The Greek word translated here as cry out, it only appears 8 times in the entire Bible. 6 of the 8 are in the book of John. 6 of the 8. 4 of the 6 come a little bit later, chapters 18, 19. And in all of those cases, when they're crying out, who is it? It's the people, and they're crying out, crucify him. You tell me this isn't a contrast. They're saying words that bring death. What is Jesus saying to Lazarus? Words that what? Bring life. Lazarus, come out, he cries. All right, when Jesus had just gotten done wiping those tears from his eyes, he says, Lazarus, come out. Let's see what happens, verse 44. The man who had died came out. His hands and his feet were bound with the linen strips. His face was wrapped with a cloth. And Jesus said, unbind him, let him go. And I'm harking back to chapter 10. Jesus said, my sheep hear my voice, even in death. My sheep hear my voice. And can you imagine Mary and Martha? No way. Let me add another layer to that. Who are the most likely people to have wrapped Lazarus and prepared him for burial? It was Mary and Martha. Hey, Mary and Martha, unbind him, let him go. And so Lazarus can't see anything. He's getting unwrapped. He heard a voice that said, wake up, basically. And who's the first faces he sees? So up until this morning, that wasn't in my notes. I'm writing this down and that realization hits me and I'm picturing that. And I'm putting it in real life terms. So I want to invite you to do that right now. So imagine you've closed your eyes for the last time as a mortal. You hear a voice calling you by name. Your eyes open and there they are. The saints who've gone before you. It's your grandma, it's your grandpa. It's your mom, your dad. Some of you who've lost kids. A close friend. People who are there. That's what you see. You hear your name. You open your eyes and there they are. Man. What if that's not just a metaphor? What if Jesus was real? What if this happened? And what if that's what's going to happen? What if? There are those who are going to walk in that reality. And then there's those who walk away from it. This is stunning. What comes next? At least it seems like it would be. John 11, 45 through 46. It says, all of the Jews, therefore, what does it say? Many. Many of the Jews who had come with Mary and had seen what he did believed in him. How is this not all? It's not all because Jesus said that, right? He said, if you're not going to trust my word, you know, the word of God, even if a dead person comes to life, that's not going to be enough. Jesus said that. And it says this, some of them went to the Pharisees and told the Pharisees what Jesus had done. There are those who saw what happened that strengthened their faith. There's those who saw what happened and they continued to listen to the voices of the thieves, the robbers, the strangers, and the hirelings. Fast forward to chapter 12. Jesus with his friends now, Mary, Martha, Lazarus. John writes this. When the large crowd learned that Jesus was there, they came not only on account of Jesus, but also to see who? Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. Look at this. So the chief priests made plans to do what? Let's kill the person who rose from the dead as well. Instead of investigating, somebody needs to hear this. Instead of investigating, is there something to this? you attack it. You might want to ask where that's coming from. You might want to ask where that's coming from. Instead of investigating, maybe there's something to this. People do the opposite. There will always be those who hate. And they hated him. They'll hate us. But just as there will always be those, there will also be those who take Jesus at his word when he says this. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. That's what he said. I am the resurrection and life. If you take him at his word, after you write that down, I invite you to write this down too. You can have a story. You can have a story like Lazarus. If you sense Jesus calling you to follow him today, you say yes, you might have some grave clothes that you need to, some help with. We'd be glad to help you with that. But when people can see, authentically see, here is a life that's changed. When people can see that, that is a powerful witness. As I was doing my reading and my research, I came across a story. And so one of the authors of one of these sources, he said, here's something that happened in my own life that testifies to this. He goes, I have a friend who's a doctor. And I was in doing my, you know, because this guy's a pastor too, an author pastor. He goes, I was at the hospital, I was visiting people, and the doctor, he stopped me in the hallway. And you know how sometimes people, they'll lower their voices? He didn't even, no lower in my voice. He goes, I get it now. I believe. I'm in. And he said, well, tell me what happened. And so this doctor went on to tell the story. The doctor grew up in a small Minnesota town. When he was young, his parents had brought him to church. Like many people, he got older. He went off to college. And he said, you know, those were beliefs back then when I was a kid. But then later in life, he heard this tragic story that the pastor of the church growing up, who he had respect for, the pastor's son, adult son, was killed in this tragic car accident right there, like 10 miles from where he lived. And so this now grown up guy who's this doctor, he goes back and he says, you know, I feel like I should at least go back and be there because what a tragedy. He goes, I can't even imagine how broken that whole congregation is going to be. So he decided to attend the funeral. He wasn't sure what to expect other than expecting to see a whole lot of brokenness. He did not expect what he saw. He saw real grief. He saw people acknowledging this is a real tragedy. But in the midst of that level of loss, he saw these people who weren't grieving like those who have no hope. And he said there was this moment where they sang this hymn, and I'll show you a couple lyrics from this hymn. He said, that was it for me. I'm looking at these words. I'm seeing these words lived out right in front of me on their faces. These people who are not denying what happened, but they really believe this isn't the end. Here are the words. It's an old hymn called Abide With Me. Here are the last two verses. I fear no foe with thee at hand to bless. Ills have no weight and tears no bitterness. Where is death's sting? Where grave thy victory? I triumph still if thou abide with me. Hold thou thy cross before my closing. Listen to these words. Hold thou thy cross before my closing eyes. Shine through the gloom. Point me to the skies. Heaven's morning breaks and earth's vain shadows flee in life, in death. O Lord, abide with me. This doctor was no stranger to death, but he saw something different in these people. They really believed this. And that doctor, in that moment, he heard the voice of a good shepherd calling him. He bowed his head, he bowed his heart. He received Jesus as his Savior, as his Lord. What about you? What about you? Here's a question I don't want to say, I want to leave you with this question. I don't want to just leave you with this question. I'm hoping you're just going to say yes to it. Will you take the word at his word? That this is more than a metaphor. Here's the thing. When you say no to Jesus of Nazareth, when you say no, or maybe sometime, here's what you're saying no to. You're saying no to the line by that. When you say yes to Jesus, you're not only saying yes to the line, you're saying yes to a much better dot. You get them both. You get the best of both. If Jesus was real, if the Bible is true, this isn't wishful thinking. That's a promise that Jesus proved he was able to keep. So the band's going to come forward in just a minute to seal this time with a song. But I want to do something I haven't done for a long time. We're going to close with a video. And here is the story on this. I don't know how I got this. That's the story. Like, it's a clip from a movie. I've never seen the movie. It's a clip from a movie. I didn't go looking for clips from a movie. I honestly, it could just be because I'm getting older, but I honestly don't know how I got this clip. That's the story. So, I mean, I do remember this. I always try to have that, Lord, I pray for your inspiration. I pray for this. So maybe it's related to that. I hope it is. But I ended up with a clip. Because I haven't seen the movie, here's what Wikipedia says about the movie. I want to make sure too, I don't recommend it because haven't seen it, right? So this is not me recommending date night movie or anything like that. Family movie night. Here's the movie. The clip is from a movie called Meet Joe Black. Meet Joe Black. According to Wikipedia, in the movie, there's a man named Bill. And he's nearing retirement. He's a really good man. He's loved by his family. He's incredibly successful at work. And there's a whole lot of the storyline, according to Wikipedia there, there's a whole lot of storyline. It revolves around his relationship with his younger daughter, who he's like, I want nothing more than for her to really be happy, really be happy. So the clip you're about to watch comes near the end of the movie. There is this huge, elaborate birthday party. It's his 65th birthday party. Huge, elaborate party is being thrown for him, and he quietly slips away. Because he knows it's his time to cross from this life into the next. So he quietly slips away from the party. And he meets a young man at the top of the stairs. And this young man is going to guide him into the afterlife. So Bill's lived a really good dot. And now he's about to take his first steps outside of that circle. So listen closely to what's said. And the thing I'll add to this, pretend that in this movie, this is a person who had said yes to Christ because of what Christ did on the cross and his yielding his life to that. These are the words he gets to hear. Let's watch the clip.